Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Oh, hell. The sound came from behind Luke. He knew what it was, having heard similar sounds many times in his life. A rattlesnake had been denned up in the rocks where he had taken cover, and the scaly creature was upset about being disturbed. A bullet flew over Luke's head and splattered against the rocks. He had a venomous serpent behind him and an equally venomous human in front of him. He crouched a little lower and looked over his shoulder. The snake had crawled out of a gap between the rocks and curled up at their base. Even though it was difficult to guess how long the snake might be since it was coiled to strike, Luke figured it would stretch out to 6 or 7 feet at least. A blasted monster, in other words, and not something he wanted to share a hidey hole with. Luke was confident he could blast the head right off that serpentine body with a single shot, but the solid rock face was right behind the snake. There was a chance the slug would ricochet back into Luke's face, a good enough chance that he didn't want to risk it. He drew the knife sheathed on his left hip. Reminding himself to keep his head down so Monroe Epps wouldn't put a bullet through it, he used his left hand to poke the Winchester's barrel at the rattler. The snake uncoiled and struck with blinding speed. Luke swatted it aside with the rifle barrel, then brought his booted left foot down on the writhing body just behind the head. The knife flashed in the sun as he brought it down and severed the snake's head from its body with one swift, clean stroke. The rifle shots came so close to Luke's head that he ducked even lower. Starting out, capturing or killing Monroe Epps had been just a job to him, but he was starting to get irritated.
Listen to me, Epps! The reward dodges on you, say dead or alive, but I'd just as soon not kill you.
You lie, Jetson! I recognized you! Everybody knows you kill a lot more men than you ever bring in alive!
That's because they're always so damn stubborn! They don't give me any choice. You can do better than that, Monroe. All you have to do is throw out all your guns and come out with your hands in the air.
Epps had forded up in a similar cluster of rocks on the other side of a broad, shallow draw, about 20 yards from Luke's position. The fugitive's horse had run off when Epps had been winged and knocked out of the saddle during their running fight a while earlier. He wasn't hurt too badly. Luke had watched the man scurry into the rocks, then had dismounted and sent his hammer-headed dun galloping back up the draw with a swat of his hat on its rump. He wanted the horse well out of the line of fire. He had taken cover as Epps started shooting at him. Monroe Epps had robbed close to a dozen banks in New Mexico Territory in western Texas. He wasn't a cold-blooded killer, the sort of mad dog outlaw who gunned down anybody who happened to get in his way. But he had killed a Texas Ranger and an El Paso City policeman during a couple of his escapes, so the Lone Star State wanted him pretty bad. Bad enough that there was a $5,000 bounty on his head.
Why would you want to give me more of a chance than all the other men you brung in dead?
We're a good long ways from the nearest town, and the weather's been pretty hot lately. If I have to kill you, there's a good chance you'll go stinking before I can get you there and collect the reward. And I have delicate sensibilities, you know.
That's funny. A bounty hunter with delicate sensibilities. I guess you just gonna have to let them be offended if you want to collect on me. Cause I ain't surrendering, Jetson. No way in hell.
You sure about that?
Damn sure!
In that case, I guess I'll just have to let a friend of mine give me a hand.
A friend? I didn't see anybody riding with you whilst you was chasing me.
You're about to meet him. I'm gonna send him over there to introduce himself.
He turned and slid the rifle barrel under the thick, scaly body of the dead rattlesnake. It had finally stopped writhing around in its death throes. Grimacing again and being careful to keep the barrel under the midpoint of the snake's body so it was balanced and wouldn't slide off, Luke picked it up with the Winchester and took hold of the rifle with both hands.
I think the sun's made you go loco, Jetson. There ain't nobody there with you.
Luke swung the Winchester in a high arc and with as much force as he could muster. At the top of the arc, the snake flew free and sailed across the draw toward the rocks where Monroe Epps had taken cover.
Son of a...
The bank robber started blazing away at the snake, trying to shoot it out of the air, never noticing that it didn't have a head anymore. Luke dropped the rifle, burst out from behind the rocks, and raced toward Epps' position. He whipped his twin Remington pistols from their cross-draw holsters as he charged the bank robber. With the speed Luke had built up, he was able to bound atop one of the rocks and look down to where he could see Epps. The outlaw tried to wheel around and bring his gun to bear on Luke. The pistol in Luke's right hand sent a slug tearing through Epps' left shoulder. The wound should have been enough to put him down, but Epps managed to stay on his feet. He held his gun and fired again, the slug sizzling past Luke's left ear. Luke figured the bank robber might be out of bullets after wasting so much lead on that rattler, but he couldn't afford to take that chance. The slug struck Epps in the chest and hammered him back against the boulder behind him. He hung there for a couple of seconds, his eyes wide with pain. His gun slipped from his fingers and thudded to the ground. Epps landed face down on the bloody shreds of the rattlesnake. Just as Luke had predicted, the body of Monroe Epps started to get a little ripe before he reached the settlement of Rio Rojo late the next day. He had been lucky enough to find Epps' horse, so he'd lashed the bank robber's corpse over the saddle. No way would he have shared his own mount with a dead man for that far. If he hadn't found Epps' horse, he would have cut off the man's head, stuck it in a canvas sack, and left the rest of him for the buzzards and coyotes. The head would have been enough to let him collect the bounty. He had done that before when he had to, although he didn't like being forced to that grisly extreme. It offended his delicate sensibilities. After more than a decade and a half as a bounty hunter, surviving in a violent land as he followed that ugly profession, he shouldn't have had any sensibilities left at all, let alone delicate ones. But to a certain extent, it was true. He was a well-spoken man. He loved to read, especially the classics, and he appreciated a fine glass of brandy along with a well-played piece of music. Once a year or so, if he had the funds, he paid a visit to San Francisco so he could take in an opera, dine in the city's best restaurants, and enjoy the company and conversation of people who weren't thieves, killers, and ruffians. He usually enjoyed the company of a few beautiful women, too, because despite the fact that he wasn't exactly handsome, far from it, in fact, with his craggy, deeply tanned face, the ladies seemed to find something about him attractive. He seldom lacked for pleasant feminine companionship during those visits to the city by the bay. San Francisco was a long way off at the moment, although he thought briefly about it as he rode down the dusty main street of Rio Rojo. Most of the buildings in the New Mexico Territory settlement were adobe, although some had been built of lumber brought in from the mountains to the north and east. A school stood at one end of the street, a church with a bell tower at the other. In between, a couple dozen businesses lined the street's three blocks. The residences were scattered haphazardly around the outer edges of the settlement. Most important for Luke's purposes, Rio Rojo had an undertaker, a bank, a marshal's office, and a telegraph office. He planned to drop off the body of Monroe Epps at the undertaker's and then pay a visit to the local law. Once the marshal confirmed who Epps was and that there was a reward offered for him, he could send a wire to Texas and claim that reward for Luke. And then the bank could pay him. Simple as that. Luke reined to a stop in front of the funeral parlor. The sound of hammering drew him to the back of the building. As he expected, he found the proprietor building a coffin.
Looks like you already have some business. I brought you another customer.
The undertaker was a dark-haired man with broad shoulders and brawny arms. He set down the hammer.
It'll have to wait a while. I gotta finish this first. Funeral for one of the town's leading citizens is tomorrow morning.
When did he die?
A couple hours ago. I've been working on this coffin for a while, though. We all knew it was just a matter of time.
The fella I brought in has been dead since the middle of the day yesterday.
Well, that might present a problem, all right. If you don't need a special-built coffin for your friend, I got a plain one already put together that might do.
Plain is fine, and he's not my friend. You can stick him in anything and put him in the ground without any ceremony, as far as I'm concerned. As long as it waits until after the marshal has taken a look at him and confirmed his identity.
All right. You got the body with you?
Out front, tied over the back of his horse.
I hope you had the decency to wrap him in a blanket or something.
I did what I could.
Well, then bring him on back here, I guess. Are you going to get the marshal now?
That's my next stop.
Well, that's fine. I'll send my boy on up to the cemetery to start digging a grave. Or does the deceased need to be laid to rest in consecrated ground?
I don't know anything about his religion, but I sure wouldn't waste anything sacred on him. Outback of Boot Hill is good enough for the likes of Monroe Epps.
I never heard of the man, but I hate to hear anyone spoken of that way. Now, how would you like it if someone said something like that about you someday?
Mister, when my time comes, they're liable to be saying a lot worse than that.
Luke had expected the corpse to draw a crowd. Dead bodies usually did whenever he brought them into a town. When he walked back around the building to the hitch rail where he had left the horses, he saw half a dozen people standing nearby. They didn't get too close. The stink saw to that, but they were near enough to satisfy their curiosity. Only one man stood right beside the horses, and he had a tin star pinned to his vest. He blew air through the walrus mustache that drooped over his mouth and jerked a thumb at the blanket-shrouded shape.
This belong to you?
I suppose it does, until I get paid for it.
Bounty hunter, eh? That don't surprise me. Who's under that blanket?
Monroe Epps.
That name's familiar.
I'm sure you've seen it on wanted posters. State of Texas has put a $5,000 bounty on his head.
Luke reached inside the breast pocket of his black shirt that a layer of trail dust had turned gray and brought out a folded piece of paper. He held it out to the lawman.
Here's one of the Dodgers. You can compare the picture on it to the body.
He reached for a corner of the blanket to pull it back.
Not here. Let's at least take him around back. I don't want to give them a show.
The marshal inclined his head toward the bystanders. Luke untied the reins of Epps' horse from the hitch rail and led the animal to the rear yard. The undertaker looked up from his work as Luke and the lawman appeared.
Marshal Dunbar?
Howdy, Calvin.
Dunbar waved a stubby-fingered hand at the coffin sitting on the sawhorses.
That the box for old Lucius Vanderslice?
That's right. He called me in and gave me instructions for what he wanted about 6 weeks ago, after the doctor told him he didn't have much time left.
Lucius was always one for being prepared, all right.
Dunbar turned to Luke.
All right, let's have a look at that carcass.
Luke pulled the blanket back enough to reveal the bank robber's slack face, even more unlovely to look at in death than it had been in life. He unfolded the reward poster he had taken from his pocket and held it up next to the dead man.
Oh, yeah, that's him, all right. No doubt about it. Epps was the name, you said.
Monroe Epps.
Luke handed the poster to the lawman.
All the particulars are on there, including the charges and the place you need to wire to authorize the reward being paid to me.
And just who might you be? I reckon I'll need to know that.
My name is Luke Jensen.
Graphic Audio presents William W. and J.A. Johnstone's Luke Jensen, Bounty Hunter. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Bradley Smith, Christopher Sheeran, Elizabeth Jernigan, James Konacek, David Coyne, Scott McCormick, Michael John Casey, Thomas Keegan, Ken Jackson, Danny Gavigan, Joe Brack, Tim Pabone, Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, Dylan Lynch, Ren Casey, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Barbara Pinolini, Jeff Allen, Lily Beacon, Nathaniel Perry, Nanette Savard, and Mort Shelby. Luke Jensen, Bounty Hunter, Episode 2, Dead Shot.
Marshal Dunbar's eyes narrowed at the mention of the name Luke Jensen.
Think I've heard of you. Used to go by Luke Smith, didn't you?
That's right.
Why would you change your name?
It's a long story, Marshal, and one that has no bearing on our dealings here. So no offense, but if it's all the same to you, I'll leave both of you to your respective tasks. I want a bath, a shave, a place to stay, and a good meal.
Uh-huh. Bathhouse is down the block on your right. The Rio Rojo Hotel is across the street. It's the best place in town. It don't have a dining room, but Slade's restaurant is in the next block and the food there is good. I reckon you'll need a livery stable for your horse.
Yes, please.
Dunbar's livery.
Luke cocked an eyebrow.
It belongs to my brother, and it's the only stable in town, so me being the law don't give it any sort of unfair advantage. What about Epps's horse?
Think your brother would pay enough for it to cover the expense of its late owner's burial?
Dunbar studied the animal with a critical eye for a moment.
More than likely. I'll see that Calvin gets paid.
Thank you. That goes for both of you gentlemen.
I'll send him that wire right away.
I'm obliged to you, Marshal.
Might get that bounty as soon as tomorrow. Once you've been paid, won't be no reason for you to hang around Rio Rojo, will there?
The question didn't surprise Luke. Most lawmen didn't like having a bounty hunter around. Neither did most of the other honest citizens, for that matter. Luke supposed he didn't blame them. He might be legally sanctioned, but he was still a killer.
That's right, Marshal. There won't be any reason for me not to move on.
Luke's first stop was the livery stable, where Marshal Dunbar's brother was more than happy to lead Luke's horse into a stall and promised to take good care of him. The Marshal had failed to mention that he and his brother were twins, right down to the shaggy mustache each man sported.
I reckon Cyrus sent you.
That would be the Marshal?
Yep, I'm Cyril.
Cyrus and Cyril Dunbar.
Yep.
He mentioned a hotel and a bathhouse, too. Are they also owned by Dunbars?
Cyril looked confused.
What? No. Old Mr. Vanderslice owned the hotel. Reckon his widow does now, since he passed away earlier today. And Felipe Ortiz runs the bathhouse and barbershop. Next closest one is all the way down over in El Paso.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Luke paid for his horse's keep for a night and left his saddle there, but took his saddlebags and Winchester with him.
Hobie, rally your hocks and fork down some more hay from the loft.
As Luke walked through Rio Rojo, his thoughts went back to what Marshal Dunbar had said about him changing his name. That wasn't strictly true. When he had started calling himself Luke Jensen again, he had merely reclaimed his real name. Luke Smith had never been anything but an alias, designed to conceal his true identity because of what he considered some shameful events during the closing days of the War of Northern Aggression. Those days were long past, and Luke had put them behind him. But he had continued to use the Luke Smith name out of habit, if nothing else. Then he had run into his younger brother Kirby, who had another name too, Smoke Jensen. Luke had suspected that his brother grew up to be the famous gunfighter known far and wide as probably the fastest man who had ever lived, but he'd avoided a meeting until fate brought them back together. Getting to know Smoke, fighting side by side with him, had convinced Luke that he ought to take the Jensen name again, but he didn't go out of his way to let folks know that he and Smoke were related. Smoke was a successful rancher in Colorado, a widely respected citizen. He didn't need people knowing that his brother followed a profession as sordid as bounty hunting. Luke stopped off at Ortiz's barbershop for a bath and a shave. Then, with that taken care of, he took his Winchester and saddlebags and walked across to the Rio Rojo Hotel, newly owned by the Widow Vanderslice. It was a two-story adobe building with a red tile roof and a balcony with decorative wrought iron railings along the second floor. Plants in pots hung from chains attached to that balcony where it formed a roof over the first floor gallery. The warm yellow glow of lamplight filled many of the windows. Luke signed the registration book for the clerk at the desk in the lobby.
I was sorry to hear about the owner's passing.
Yes, Mr. Vanderslice was a good man to work for. He was one of the first American settlers in Rio Rojo, you know. But he'd been sick for quite a while, so his death came as no surprise. Still, it's a sad day, Mr. Jensen, is it?
That's right.
You're the man who brought in that dead outlaw earlier.
I am.
Did you have anything to do with him being dead?
Luke didn't see any point in lying. The whole story would be all over town in no time anyway. He knew how quickly gossip spread in little settlements like Rio Rojo.
Fella tried to kill me.
I discouraged him permanently.
There won't be anything like that happening here in the hotel, will there?
Well, nothing is certain in this life. If you prefer, I can seek other accommodations.
No, that won't be necessary. We'll just hope for the best.
I always do.
The clerk gave him the key to room 8.
To your left, at the top of the stairs.
It was a good enough room, clean, and with a bed that looked comfortable, along with a woven rug on the floor. The single window opened onto the balcony and overlooked the street. He thought he might make a pallet on the floor on the other side of the bed when he got back from supper and heap some pillows and blankets under the covers to make it look like a man was sleeping there, just in case. Marshall Dunbar had recommended Slade's restaurant in the next block. Luke was there eating a decent steak a little while later when the lawman came in, looked around the room, spotted him, and started toward him.
Avery at the hotel said you got a room and then left again but didn't take your things with you. So I figured you'd gone to eat.
Dunbar pulled out one of the vacant chairs at the table and sat down without being invited.
I sent that telegram to the Rangers in Texas. Don't really expect to hear back from them until the morning, though. How much of a reward did you say you was due for that fella Epps?
$5,000.
Our bank ought to be able to cover that. I'm sure you've noticed that Rio Rojo ain't very big. But we're sitting right between some prime ranching country to the north and some good producing silver mines to the south. So the bank does pretty well for itself. Has to keep considerable cash on hand for payrolls and such like, not to mention the occasional bounty.
Have you ever had to pay one out before?
No, can't say we have. But there's got to be a first time for everything, don't there? Hell, you might even get through a day without being shot at.
It could happen. But I don't think I'm going to hold my breath waiting for it.
Luke still felt vaguely unsatisfied when he was finished with his meal, even though the food was good. Pausing on the street outside the restaurant, he fished a cigar out of his pocket and struck a match to light it. When he'd puffed the cheroot to life, he shook out the match and dropped it in the dust at his feet. Smoking his cigar, Luke strolled back to the Rio Rojo Hotel. It was a little before midnight. As he went inside, he saw the lobby was empty, and he saw no sign of the clerk. He went upstairs, drew one of the Remingtons, and used his other hand to unlock the door as he stood to one side of it, just in case somebody was waiting on the other side to fire a shotgun through the panel at the first rattle of a key in the lock. The room was empty. Working by the starlight that came through the window, Luke made the covers look like someone was sleeping under them, then bedded down on the floor as he had planned. The mattress would have been softer and more comfortable, but the floor was better than a lot of places he had slept. Tomorrow he would collect the reward he had coming from Monroe Epps and ride out of Rio Rojo in search of his next quarry. Luke dozed off quickly and was still sound asleep when the sun rose and a new day began in the settlement. Gunner Kelly knew the Rio Rojo Bank opened promptly at 9 o'clock every morning. He had been in the settlement for a week, keeping an eye on the place until Dog Eater got there. The Apache had shown up the night before, so there was no point in waiting any longer to go on about their business. The two of them stood on the porch in front of the general store and watched the bank manager unlock the door of the building across the street. Kelly took off his battered old brown hat and ran his fingers through his red hair. His skin was so fair it never tanned, just blistered whenever he stayed out in the sun too long.
We wait until the manager has time to unlock the safe so he can take out some cash for the drawers and the teller's cages.
Huh.
Then we go in before he can close the safe again. That way we don't have to waste time forcing him to open it. I know how long it takes for him to get the money out. I watched through the window the other day and counted it off in my head.
Those numbers were already ticking over in Kelly's brain. When he'd gone to school as a kid, he'd always had trouble with reading and writing, but numbers came as natural to him as riding a horse and shooting a gun. Everybody had their own strengths, he liked to tell himself, and he knew how to put his to good use.
The tellers won't give us any trouble. I'm gonna pistol whip the manager right away, so he won't either. We should be out of there in 5 minutes.
Huh.
Dog Eater was short and stocky, like most Apache men, although he had a habit of carrying himself sort of stooped over and was taller when he straightened up. He had a Navajo blanket wrapped around his body, concealing the faded blue shirt, the buckskin leggings, the breechcloth, the double gun belt, and the crossed bandoliers of ammunition he wore. He looked harmless, which was exactly how he wanted to look. Kelly wore range clothes and could have been mistaken for a drifting cowboy. The only thing about him that stood out, other than his pasty face, was the pearl-handled Colt on his hip. That gun was his pride and joy, and he was good with it. Good enough that he had killed 3 men back in his native Missouri and earned the nickname Gunner before he was 20 years old. During the past 5 years, while embarking on a career of outlawry, he had killed 6 more, and not lost 1 second of sleep over it either.
There's one of the tellers. And here comes the other one. We'll give it a couple more minutes.
The time seemed to pass slowly to Kelly as tension grew inside him. He wasn't scared, just ready to get on with it.
Now?
Now.
Kelly started across the street with an easy, confident stride. Dog Eater shuffled along a couple of steps behind him. When they walked into the bank, the manager mistook them for the first customers of the day. His gaze flicked over Dog Eater and then ignored him, except for a fleeting grimace of distaste. He smiled at Kelly from the teller's cage where he was putting money in the drawer.
We'll be right with you, friend.
Kelly walked up to the cage and drew his gun.
You'll take care of us now.
Behind him, Dog Eater shrugged the Navajo blanket aside and raised both pistols. He covered the stunned tellers while Kelly leveled his revolver at the bank manager.
Come on out of there and you won't get hurt. I didn't say for you to talk. Just do what you're told or I'll kill you.
Kelly paused for a second to give his next words the proper dramatic weight.
I'm Gunner Kelly, so you know I'll do it.
The bank manager's eyes widened in fear. Kelly had a reputation, all right. He and his Indian partner had robbed close to 10 of banks in New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, and Utah. Kelly was so contemptuous of the law, apparently with good reason, that he never tried to conceal his identity. He announced it every time he and Dog Eater pulled a job. The manager raised his hands and came out from behind the counter.
Don't shoot me, Mr. Kelly. Please, I have a wife.
That's your problem. My problem is relieving you of all the money in this bank.
Well, there's really not that much.
Oh, you shouldn't lie to me.
Kelly struck without warning, slamming the pistol in his hand against the man's head. The bank manager went down like a pole-axed steer. Dog Eater pulled a canvas sack from under his shirt and tossed it onto the counter. He glared at the tellers.
What he means is that you boys should start filling up that sack. Get everything in your cash drawers and then all the money in that safe, too. Make it fast. Somebody comes in before we're finished, there's liable to be shooting. And we'll make sure you boys catch the first bullets.
The tellers didn't waste any time. The sack was bulging with greenbacks in a matter of minutes. Dog Eater holstered one of his Colts and took the loot. He started back toward the door.
I don't have to tell you what'll happen if you raise a ruckus before we're well out of here. You just tend to your boss there and make sure he's all right. That way everybody gets to live.
Kelly backed through the door after Dog Eater. The two of them turned and walked quickly toward their horses tied nearby, but not quickly enough to draw attention. It might have worked if a hearse pulled by a team of 6 black horses hadn't rounded a nearby corner just then, carrying Lucius Vanderslice's body to the church for his funeral. The buggy right behind the hearse had Mrs. Aurora Vanderslice in it and was being driven by Marshal Cyrus Dunbar, who knew right away what was going on when he saw 2 men walking out of the bank, one of them carrying a full canvas sack.
Son of a...
Dunbar dropped the reins and clawed at the spot on his hip where his gun usually was. But he hadn't figured he would need it at a funeral, so he hadn't worn it. He had his badge pinned to his coat, though, and that was all Kelly needed to see. He turned, flame lancing from the muzzle of his fancy Colt as he opened fire on the lawman. Kelly's bullet slammed into Dunbar and drove him heavily against the Widow Vanderslice. The marshal was hit hard, but he had the presence of mind to shield the woman's body with his own. He pressed a hand to the hole in his side where blood was leaking out. Since there was no point in trying not to attract attention anymore, Kelly and Dog Eater raced toward their horses as several more buggies came along the street. Kelly opened fire on the crowd, aiming a little high. Dog Eater followed suit, spraying lead just over the heads of the townspeople. They scattered like a flock of spooked chickens. None of the men returned the fire. Too much confusion in the street, and there were women folk to protect. Kelly and Dog Eater reached their horses without anybody making an attempt to stop them. They jerked the reins free from the hitch rail, then swung up into their saddles. With an efficient twist of his wrist, the Apache tied the money sack's drawstring around his saddle horn. Kelly sent another shot, screaming into the crowd as he wheeled his horse. A young man dashed toward the bank robbers, intent on grabbing Kelly and pulling him out of the saddle. The outlaw swung the gun toward the kid and pulled the trigger.
Damn it!
The young man lunged. Kelly kicked him in the chest and the kid flew backward and landed in a sprawl.
Yeah.
Dog Eater urged his horse into a gallop and raced past Kelly as he headed toward the edge of town. Kelly booted his mount into a run and leaned forward in the saddle to make himself a smaller target in case any of the townsmen decided to take a pot shot at him. The sound of gunfire roused Luke from sleep. He hadn't had much to drink the night before, so he wasn't hungover. But the time he had spent with Magdalena had been exhausting. In a good way, of course. But still, he wasn't as young as he used to be. The shooting was in the street somewhere. It wasn't any of his business. He was tempted to roll over and go back to sleep. Then Luke heard the screaming, and he knew he wouldn't be able to do that. He climbed to his feet and drew one of the Remington pistols from its holster where the gun rig lay coiled on a chair. As he slid up the pane in the room's lone window and threw a leg over the sill and onto the balcony, he heard hoofbeats drumming in the street. Two men were riding past the hotel. Kelly didn't hear any guns go off behind him, but as he and Dog Eater rode past the hotel, a man with a gun in his hand stepped out onto the second floor balcony. Kelly glanced up and saw him. The man had a craggy, hard-planed face, a thin black mustache, and slightly curly black hair. He had a good shot at Kelly, too, and Kelly's gun was empty. All it took was a glance for Luke to recognize him. He had never laid eyes on them in the flesh, but he had seen plenty of reward posters for Gunner Kelly and his Apache partner, Dog Eater. The lumpy canvas sack tied to Dog Eater's saddle horn was more than enough evidence for Luke to feel certain the sack was stuffed full of money that the two men had just stolen from the Rio Rojo Bank. Luke lifted his gun, but before he could draw a bead, Dog Eater opened fire on him. The first shot screamed past his ear and thudded into the wall behind him. He felt the hot breath of the second slug against his left ear. Dog Eater had him bracketed, and Luke felt confident the next shot would hit him right between the eyes. He flung himself backward through the open window, and that quick reaction was all that saved his life as Dog Eater triggered again and the bullet sizzled through the space where Luke's head had been an instant earlier. Diving out of the line of fire, Luke wound up sprawled on the floor inside the window with his legs hanging out. By the time he recovered from that awkward position and looked out the window again, he caught just a glimpse of the two riders disappearing around a corner. He bit back a curse. Kelly and Dog Eater would be long gone before he could get dressed and have his horse ready to ride. From the looks of the confusion Luke had seen in the street, nobody was going to be mounting a posse anytime soon either. It appeared the bank robbers had made a clean getaway. He pulled on his clothes, buckled his gun belt around his hips, and hurried downstairs. The clerk's eyes seemed big around as saucers.
My God, did you hear all that shooting?
I heard it.
He went out to check on the aftermath of the robbery. Now that Kelly and Dog Eater were gone and lead had stopped flying around, people were emerging from the buildings where they had taken cover and converging on the vehicles that had stopped in the middle of the street. Luke recognized a familiar figure in the first buggy and headed in that direction. An older woman in a black hat and mourning dress perched on the seat, crying as she tugged on the sleeve of the man next to her.
You have to go after Marshall. They ruined poor Lucius's funeral. You have to go after them.
Marshal Cyrus Dunbar didn't say anything. His face was pale, and he was holding himself like he was hurt. As Luke came up to the buggy, he saw blood trickling over the fingers of Dunbar's hands.
Madam, I believe the marshal has been shot.
His voice was loud and urgent enough to break through her hysteria.
But poor Lucius.
Luke figured she was the widow of the late Mr. Vanderslice.
I don't want to be rude, ma'am. Your husband is beyond harm. The same can't be said for the marshal here.
I'm shot, but it ain't too bad. I gotta raise a posse and go after those varmints.
Luke lifted Dunbar's hands and pulled the coat and shirt aside to get a better look at the wound. The bullet had penetrated Dunbar's body, but the wound wasn't much more than a deep graze. Messy, but probably not life-threatening. Dunbar would be off his feet for a while because of it, though. Rapid footsteps pounded up beside the buggy. Luke glanced over and saw the Undertaker, Calvin.
I brought the doc.
Luke was glad to step back. He had patched up plenty of gunshot wounds in his time, including some he had suffered, but he was better at inflicting damage than repairing it. He let the spare, white-haired physician take over.
Does the marshal have a deputy?
Cyril Dunbar, the liveryman, stepped forward from the gathering crowd.
I helped out Si whenever he needed a hand. I ain't exactly what you'd call a lawman, though.
A young man who was rubbing his chest edged forward.
Mr. Dunbar?
Now, hush up, Hobie. You ain't no deputy either. And that was a damn fool stunt you pulled running out there trying to stop those fellas. You're lucky that one just kicked you and didn't kill you. I saw him point his gun at you and pull the trigger. You'd be dead now if he hadn't run out of bullets when he did.
But you know, your brother promised he'd take me on as a deputy one of these days. At least part-time. He said I could work for you as a hostler during the day, and he'd make me night deputy.
And where would you have slept if he'd done that?
Luke didn't see that the wrangling was accomplishing anything. The end result was that Rio Rojo didn't have any real law except Cyrus Dunbar, and the marshal wasn't going to be chasing any outlaws for a while. That left it up to him. Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater each had a price on his head, and Luke wasn't going to pass up a chance to collect those bounties. First, though, he had business to finish. He turned back to the buggy.
How's he doing, Doc?
He's passed out from loss of blood, but I think he's going to be all right.
Luke nodded. Calvin had helped the Widow Vanderslice out of the buggy and was awkwardly patting her on the back while she leaned against him and sobbed.
We're going to have to go on with the funeral, Doc.
And don't let me stop you. I'll take Cyrus down to my house in this buggy. You can load Mrs. Vanderslice and one of the others and continue with the service and burial.
Luke left them to sort out the details and walked down the street to the telegraph office. He found the telegrapher standing on the porch, watching the commotion in the street.
The marshal sent a telegram to Texas yesterday afternoon. Has a reply come in yet?
The telegrapher frowned.
I can't hardly tell you that, mister. It's against the rules.
But Marshal Dunbar sent the telegram on my behalf. I'm Luke Jensen. The telegram was to confirm that I'm entitled to collect a reward on an outlaw named Monroe Epps.
I know who you are, Mr. Jensen. I reckon just about everybody in Rio Rojo knows you're the bounty hunter. But I still can't reveal the contents of a message intended for somebody else.
Then you have gotten a reply from Texas.
Well, I didn't say... Oh, hell. I guess I can tell you that a reply came in for the marshal a little while ago. I was going to give it to him as soon as Mr. Vanderslice's funeral was over. Do you know if the marshal is going to be all right?
He should be.
I tell you what. I'll get the telegram, and we'll go down to Doc Pritchard's place. If the marshal's awake, I'll ask him if it's all right to give the wire to you.
The man went in the office and came back a moment later. The funeral procession had gotten underway again and was approaching the church at the other end of town.
I'm a little surprised that the bank and the telegraph office and all the other businesses are open this morning. If this fellow Vanderslice was as important as everybody seems to think he was, I would have thought the whole town would close down for the funeral.
Oh, Mr. Vanderslice wouldn't have wanted that, especially for the bank to close. He owned it, you know.
No, I didn't know that. I thought he owned the hotel.
Oh, yeah, that too. And the general store. He really was an important man. Not to speak ill of the dead, but he liked to squeeze every dollar he could out of his businesses. His widow's like that, too. She's a real skinflint. She's very thrifty and a canny businesswoman.
I get your drift, my friend. She probably gave orders for all the businesses to stay open.
I'm sure she did.
They reached the whitewashed frame house where the doctor's office and residence were located. When they went inside, they found Marshal Cyrus Dunbar sitting up in a bed while Dr. Pritchard wound bandages around his midsection. The marshal's brother was there, too.
Jensen, I should have known you'd have something to do with me getting shot.
Not at all, Marshal. I was sound asleep when the shooting started. I did try to stop the robbers as they galloped out of town, but all I got for my trouble was to come uncomfortably close to having a bullet part my hair.
Bullet hole or no bullet hole, I still gotta breathe, Doc.
You get a look at the varmints?
Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater. I've never crossed trails with them before, but I've seen posters on them.
Yeah, so have I. Everything happened so fast out there on the street, I never had a chance to take a good look at them. But I know bank robbers when I see them. The Indian had a bag full of money.
Dunbar frowned at the telegrapher.
Hank, what are you doing here?
I got a reply to that message you sent yesterday, Marshal. Mr. Jensen here wanted to take a look at it, but I told him I couldn't let him do that without your say-so.
Give it here.
The telegrapher handed him the yellow telegraph flimsy he had brought along from the office. Dunbar squinted at the piece of paper in his hand.
Where the hell are my spectacles?
Luke tried to suppress the growing feelings of impatience and frustration inside him. The doctor handed Dunbar a pair of glasses. The marshal settled them on his nose and peered intently at the telegram for a moment.
Looks like you get your reward, Jensen. This authorizes the bank to pay it out to you. Only, wasn't the bank just robbed?
Luke's eyes widened in the realization that Dunbar was right. He knew he should have thought of that earlier. The time he had spent with Magdalena must have taken more out of him than he had thought.
Cyril, consider yourself deputized again. Go with Jensen to the bank and find out just how bad things are. Take this telegram with you.
All right, Cyrus. You take good care of him, Doc.
Luke was seething inside as he and Cyril headed for the bank. The street was mostly empty, although knots of people stood here and there in front of the buildings, still talking about the excitement that had gripped the town earlier. When Luke and Cyril reached the bank, they found the front door locked. Cyril banged a fist on it, and a minute later one of the tellers came to open it. He looked pretty shaken.
Mr. Belford told us the bank was closed for the time being.
Well, I'm the law for the time being, and I gotta talk to him. My brother sent me to find out just how bad things are.
Oh, bad. Really bad.
He stepped back to let them into the bank. Belford, the manager, sat at a desk with his face in his hands. He had a bloody lump on his head where one of the robbers had pistol-whipped him. He looked up as Luke and Cyril approached him.
Cyril, how's your brother? I heard he was shot.
Doc Pritchard thinks he'll be all right. You look like you're hurt too, Ed.
Belford shook his head.
Oh, this is nothing. What really hurts is that the robbers cleaned us out.
Luke took the telegram from Cyril's hand and set it on the desk in front of the bank manager.
This wire authorizes you to pay me a $5,000 reward on behalf of the state of Texas.
Belford stared at him for a couple of seconds.
Mister, I told you they cleaned us out. I couldn't pay you a $5 reward right now. You're just downright out of luck.
Losing his temper wasn't going to do any good, and Luke knew it. Despite that, he couldn't stop himself from picking up the telegram and crumpling it in his hand. He threw it on the floor, turned, and stalked out of the bank. He had planned to go after Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater anyway. Now he had even more reason to do so. He couldn't collect what he was owed from Monroe Epps unless he recovered the stolen money. Luke headed for the stable. He had left Cyril Dunbar behind at the bank, but that didn't matter. He was used to saddling his own horse. When he walked in, Hobie, the young hostler, paused in mucking out one of the stalls.
What can I do for you, Mr. Jensen?
Not a thing. I'm taking my horse. Your boss and I should be square on the bill.
Yes, sir, I know. Are you going after those outlaws?
Damn right I am.
Luke went into the stall where his horse was stabled, pulled the saddle blanket off the partition between stalls, and threw it over the horse's back.
I'd be glad to do that for you. Isn't your gear still over at the hotel? Let me saddle up for you. It'll save you a little time.
Thanks, Obie. I'm obliged to you.
I'm glad to do it. I'd like to be a bounty hunter myself someday.
Luke looked at the skinny, gangling young hostler with his mop of brown hair and thought Hobie looked about as much like a bounty hunter as President Grover Cleveland did. But he didn't see any point in saying that, so he just gave the young man a curt nod and headed for the hotel to get his saddlebags and rifle. Luke entered the hotel and immediately went upstairs to get his gear from his room. When he came down to the lobby again, he was surprised to see the Widow Vanderslice standing beside the desk with the bank manager, Belford. It was obvious that she was waiting for him.
Mr. Jensen, I want to talk to you.
Luke had his saddlebags thrown over his right shoulder and his Winchester in his left hand. He didn't want anything slowing him down, but his upbringing wouldn't allow him to be rude to any woman, let alone one who was mourning her husband. He took his hat off.
"Ma'am, I'm sorry for your loss."
She was dry-eyed and looked stern and angry, especially in that black getup.
"If you're talking about my late husband, Lucius, then I appreciate your condolences, Mr. Jensen. If you're talking about the money those scoundrels stole out of my bank, I've come to make you an offer."
"Actually, ma'am, I thought you would still be at the funeral."
"Well, once I calmed down from having Marshal Dunbar shot while he was right beside me, I realized that Lucius wouldn't want me to neglect our business. I told Calvin Dobbs the service would have to be postponed for a short time, and I came to find you."
Luke frowned.
"Me, ma'am?"
"I realize that you're a bounty hunter."
She couldn't keep a tone of disapproval out of her voice.
"At the same time, with Cyrus Dunbar laid up, you're the closest thing Rio Rojo has to a representative of law and order at the moment. You're also the only man in this town who's qualified to go after those bank robbers."
"That's exactly what I intend to do, Mrs. Vanderslice. My horse is being saddled right now, and it's..."
"I understand you were going to collect a $5,000 reward from my bank. I'll see that $5,000 and raise $5,000. That's the correct parlance, isn't it?"
Luke's frown deepened.
"For what, ma'am?"
"If you go after those outlaws and bring back the money they stole, I'll see to it that you receive not only the reward that's already owed to you, but I'll also pay you an additional reward of $5,000. That's $10,000 over and above whatever you might collect for those two men."
Luke understood and nodded.
"That's very generous. I was going after them anyway, but an extra $5,000 certainly doesn't hurt."
"In situations like this, the rewards are usually paid whether the fugitives are brought in dead or alive, correct?"
"That is correct."
The widow's blue eyes were cold and hard as chips of ice.
"Then I'll simply ask this as a favor to an old woman, Mr. Jensen. Bring him back dead."
After picking up his horse at the livery stable and some supplies at the general store, Luke rode to the edge of town where the bank robbers had galloped out of Rio Rojo. Picking up their trail wasn't difficult for his experienced eyes. He had tracked fugitives in all sorts of places, under all sorts of conditions. Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater had been in a hurry to get out of town, so they hadn't worried about concealing their tracks. The temperature rose as midday approached. Luke continued following the trail westward as it led into a wide stretch of salt flats that shone a dazzling white in the sunlight. The ground had been baked so hard by the sun that it didn't take tracks easily. The signs left by the fleeing outlaws were a lot more sparse. He had to concentrate harder in order not to lose the trail. Despite that concentration, he was still alert to things around him, and a sudden prickling of the skin on the back of his neck warned him that someone was watching him.
"Whoa!"
He reined in and hipped around in the saddle to look behind him. Nothing but the salt flats and the gently rolling hills to the east where Rio Rojo was located met his gaze. As far as he could see, nobody was back there. But his instincts said otherwise. Having learned to trust them, his eyes narrowed as he thought about what that might mean. Someone could have followed him from the settlement. It was also possible that Kelly and Dog Eater, or at least one of them, had peeled off and lay in wait to let any pursuit pass by. Then they could follow and bushwhack anybody who was trying to trail them. Such an attack didn't seem imminent to Luke. For one thing, there wasn't enough cover to try something like that. But he was sure that someone was behind him, so he was going to remain doubly vigilant. When the time came, maybe he would set up an ambush of his own. A little later, he came across an area where the ground was slightly softer. Kelly and his Apache partner either hadn't noticed the change or were so confident they were going to get away, they hadn't gone to the trouble to avoid it. They had ridden straight across that stretch. Luke had no trouble making out the tracks of both horses. He knew they belonged to the mounts being ridden by the bank robbers. He had studied the tracks enough to recognize the little nicks and irregularities in the prints the horseshoes made. That meant if someone was following him, as he was still convinced was true. It wasn't Gunner Kelly or Dog Eater. Those two outlaws were still ahead of him. The afternoon passed slowly. From time to time, Luke came across horse droppings and dismounted to take a closer look so he could get a better idea how far ahead of him his quarry was. Kelly and Dog Eater had about an hour's lead on him when he started out from Rio Rojo. They seemed to be maintaining that. Luke's horse was fairly fresh after spending the night in Cyril Dunbar's livery stable, but Luke had been on the move quite a bit in the past few weeks, so the animal didn't have deep reserves of strength and stamina. He didn't know what condition the outlaws' horses were in, but it stood to reason that Kelly and Dog Eater would have made sure they had well-rested mounts before they robbed the bank. Luke worried that Kelly and Dog Eater might manage to get their hands on fresh horses. If that happened, they could stretch out their lead even more. There were a few isolated ranches spread out around there, Luke recalled with a frown as he continued riding west. The two men might be able to make a trade. If not, they wouldn't hesitate to take whatever they wanted and kill anybody who tried to stop them. The sun dipped lower and lower as he left the salt flats behind. He knew it wouldn't take long for darkness to descend over the rugged landscape. He started looking for a good place to make camp while the fiery orb slid the rest of the way down below the curve of the earth. He found a shallow dip where enough water had collected in the past to nourish a little grass and a couple of scrubby mesquite trees, although no moisture was to be found at the moment. He picketed and unsaddled the horse, poured some water from one of his canteens into his hat so it could drink, then left the animal to graze. Taking a folding shovel from his gear, he dug a fire pit deep enough to conceal the flames of the small blaze he built of mesquite twigs. He figured Kelly and Dog Eater would assume someone was on their trail, but there was no point in confirming that and telling him exactly where he was. He boiled a pot of coffee and fried some bacon. After he had washed down his meager supper with a couple of cups of Arbuckles, he sat and mused as he peered into the darkness and let the fire burn down. When he saw a little flash of green light in the distance, he thought he had imagined it.
What the?
But it came again, and then again. On the third time, the light caught and held. It grew stronger. Luke's eyes narrowed as he studied the glow. Something was on fire about a mile away from him. He remembered those ranches he'd been considering earlier. It was possible Kelly and Dog Eater had stopped at one of the spreads, enjoyed the hospitality of the others, and tried to make a horse trade. It was also possible they had just ridden in, gunned down the rancher and his family, taken what they wanted, and set the place on fire as they left. Either way, the knowledge that his quarry might be that close drove Luke to his feet. He started to saddle his horse again.
Sorry about this, fella. I know you're ready to eat your fill of this grass and get some rest. Maybe you still can before the night's over.
Once he had everything packed and the horse ready to ride, he headed for the still visible light. Something was definitely burning, and that was a bad sign. When he got close enough to make out the actual flames, he saw that a long, low ranch house was on fire. The roof and the insides were burning, but the adobe walls prevented the fire from spreading to the barn and corrals off to one side. Lit up by the flames from the house, Luke could see the spread was a small one, the sort of outfit a man would run alone or with his wife. Luke reined in about 50 yards from the burning ranch house.
Hello? Is anybody here? Hello?
There was no reply, and he didn't see anybody moving around the house. He turned toward the barn and rode up to the open double doors.
Is anybody in there?
He got an answer right away in the form of a spurt of orange flame from the muzzle of a gun as a bullet whipped past his ear. Luke jerked his horse aside.
Hold your fire, damn it! I'm a friend!
He didn't know that for sure. It might have been Kelly or Dog Eater who took that shot at him.
Yeah.
He heeled the horse into a run toward the corner of the barn as he drew one of the Remington pistols. Luke kicked his feet free of the stirrups and dropped to the ground as his mount reached the corner. He let the horse run on into the darkness as he pressed his back against the rough wall and drew his other gun. Watching the barn doors, he listened intently. At first, all he could hear was the roaring crackle of flames from the house. Then what he thought was a muffled cough came from inside the barn. The gunman was still there. Luke began edging toward the doors. he heard another cough. The man inside the barn sounded like he wasn't in very good shape. He might have been drunk, but more than likely he was hurt.
Damn. Outlaws. Goddamn owl hoots. Show yourselves again. I'll kill you for what you've done. Send you both to hell.
Luke's eyes narrowed. The man in the barn was cursing two men. Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater seemed pretty likely. The man probably was the owner of the ranch. The bank robbers could have wounded him, stolen some horses, and left him in the barn to die. But he wasn't dead yet. When Luke had ridden up, the man could have mistaken him for one of the outlaws returning, especially if he was wounded and in bad shape. But why was the house on fire? Were Kelly and the Apache responsible for that too? The basic theory made sense, Luke decided, so he risked calling out again to the man in the barn.
Hey, mister! I'm not one of the men who did this. I'm on the trail. Like I told you, I'm a friend.
Why?
Luke realized the question wasn't exactly directed at him.
Why'd you have to do it? We give you everything you asked for. Why'd you have to do that to Martha?
That anguished question made Luke frown. In his profession, he had seen so much ugliness, so many examples of utter depravity, that he realized there were no depths of horror to which human beings couldn't sink when they chose to. He had learned to steel himself to that fact, but reminders of it still affected him. He heard the agonized grief in the man's voice and realized the poor fellow was suffering from that as much as from any physical injury the outlaws had inflicted on him. In that state, it was unlikely Luke would be able to get through to him. He wanted to help the man if he could, might be able to patch up a bullet wound even if he couldn't do anything else, and he wanted to know how long ago Kelly and Dog Eater had been there. He had to at least try to get that information out of the man in the barn. Luke pouched both irons. Then he took a deep breath and exploded into action. Driving hard around the edge of the door and going into the barn low and fast, he knew he would be silhouetted for a second against the flames, but he was counting on his speed and the inability of the wounded man to react very quickly. Even so, the man got off a shot. The muzzle flash from his rifle lit up the barn for an instant. Luke didn't have any idea where the bullet hit. All he knew was that it didn't hit him. Using the rifle's flash as a guide, he reached out and the back of his hand hit the weapon's barrel. He grabbed it and wrenched it to the side as he rammed into the man. His other hand twisted in the man's shirt front and he swung him around. When the rifle came free, he slung it away.
Take it easy. I don't want to hurt you. I'll help you if you let me.
The man struggled weakly in his grip.
Why'd you do it? Why'd you have to hurt her?
I didn't hurt her. I didn't hurt Martha.
Luke figured that was the name of the man's wife.
Why?
The man suddenly went limp in Luke's hands. It wasn't a trick. He'd either passed out or died. Luke got one arm around his shoulders and the other behind his knees and picked him up, carrying him out of the barn. The man was slender and didn't weigh all that much. Luke carried the grim burden several yards toward the house until the light from the fire reached them. He knelt and lowered the man to the ground. The blood that soaked the man's midsection was black in the flame's glare. When Luke saw how much of it there was and where it was located, he knew there was no chance he'd be able to do anything other than bury him. The rancher had been shot at least twice in the gut. But he was still alive. Luke's horse responded to his whistle and came trotting up to him. He didn't like the fire, but was well-trained enough to answer Luke's summons. Luke reached for one of his canteens, then changed his mind and delved into the saddlebags for a small silver flask. He unscrewed the cap as he knelt beside the wounded man. He got a hand behind the man's head and lifted it, then trickled some whiskey into his mouth. Some of it spilled, but enough went down the man's throat to make him cough. It probably hurt like hell, Luke thought, and it brought him back from unconsciousness. The man was in his 40s, with the whittled-down look of one who had led a hard-scrabble life, as most small ranchers did. With firelight painting one side of his face a garish red, the man looked up at Luke.
Who are you?
I'm looking for the men who did this to you. A white man and an Injun, isn't that right?
Yeah. The Injun was an Apache, I think. He's the one who shot me. Don't know why. I would have traded horses with him.
because that's the sort of men they are. Worthless, no-good scum who aren't fit to breathe the same air as decent human beings.
You must know them, all right. After they shot me, they went after my wife. Poor Martha. Reckon they thought I was dead. But I wasn't. I heard what they'd done to her. Heard her scream just before one of them cut her throat.
The whiskey seemed to have revived the man somewhat, but Luke knew that wouldn't last.
How long ago was this?
I don't know. Hours. Middle of the afternoon. The sun was still up.
Luke frowned in puzzlement. From the place where he'd made camp, he'd seen the fire start. If the attack on the rancher and his wife had taken place that afternoon, why had Kelly and Dog Eater waited around so long to start the blaze and ride off?
What made them start the fire?
The man's eyes were sliding closed again, but Luke's question made him open them.
They didn't. I did. I passed out. Lay there for I don't know how long. And when I come to, I saw what they'd done to her. I took her in the house. Laid her out in our bed. I knew I'd never be able to bury her proper.
Luke turned his head and looked at the burning house, realizing now that it was the woman's funeral pyre. The rancher had done what he could for his wife, and Luke was amazed at what he had managed, as badly wounded as he was. Somehow, the rancher found the strength to clutch at Luke's sleeve.
You said you're chasing those fellas?
I am. I intend to bring them to justice.
There's nothing justice can do that'll be bad enough to pay them back for what they've done. They don't deserve justice. What they're needing is vengeance.
The man's claw-like hand closed harder on Luke's arm. His body arched up from the ground as a spasm gripped him. His eyes grew wide. He was gone. Gently, Luke lowered the man's head to the ground again. What had happened here was two more marks in the ledger against Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater. Black marks. Or maybe red for blood. Luke wondered how many more marks there would be before he caught up to the murdering twosome.